I don't count down much lately, and I want to start counting down again to make sure you feel fully ready for me to say hello and welcome to Chats the Television Podcast, Season 9, Better Off Chats. My name is Alan, and I'm joined by the man who always asks if we can leave work early, even though we're not Somali pirates. It's Magellan.
I just, you know, otherwise they're going to ask us to stay late, or you're going to get caught in a conversation with someone or something, and then you're not really ending the workday at the end of the workday, you know what I mean?
It's pretty messed up at workplaces when it's like 3:35 on a Friday and someone's like, yeah, that's pretty cool. What are you doing this weekend? And they ask you and you sincerely answer. And then they're like, oh, by the way, I have this thing I need to do. And they're basically giving you a whole project. And you're like, this is going to sit in the back of my head forever.
I feel like I'm a Grinch for not liking this. And, you know, I don't think anybody from my work listens to the show. And if they did, I'm fine having this opinion.
And if they did, patreon.com/chatspot.
Thank you very much. But we have shout outs every week at my school for the staff. And you just, you know, people know how shout outs work, right? And it starts at 3:50 on Friday, but our workday usually ends at 4. Mm-hmm. And shout outs just goes as long as people have them to give. And so I think other people like shout outs because they're like, yeah, I'm feeling the love. Like, oh, I want to shout out so-and-so for like really owning their role and doing their work. And like, you're so great. Awesome. Cool. That's nice. But then it like will go until 4:20 or 4:30. And it's like, come on, guys.
My workplace does a lot of stuff like that, but especially now because they're trying to make sure people know that they're a part of a team, even though everyone's working remote. So we do a bi-weekly meeting, which is, as people, I'm sure other people in teams have heard before, is the kind of meeting where someone goes, hey, systems, anything to report? No. All right, budgeting, anything to report? not really. Budget is budget.
Okay.
Services, okay. Anything to report? Yeah, everything's on fire. Okay, cool. Can we take that offline? Can we actually take that offline? That sounds important. Please, can we take that offline? All right, we'll see everybody in 2 weeks. Bye. No. We do those, which are a nightmare. And then we do virtual water coolers, which are a weekly thing where we get selected to talk to two random people from our team for 15 minutes minimum, and it's kind of a speed dating thing where you have to talk about whatever you want.
Oh, my God. For 15
Hell
minutes?
Hell yeah. At 3 o'clock on a Wednesday. Like, I leave at 4.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Oh, that sucks.
And because it's a random seed, in one time, I got my boss and my previous boss, which I was like, this sucks. I don't want to talk to either of you right now. Bye.
Oh,
and then
wow.
Last week I got the coworker who I sit next to for 8 hours a day and a woman who neither of us have ever met. And we were like, so we're not doing this, right? Like, we don't have to do this. This is stupid.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah. Workplace socials.
Okay, well,
work is hell, Magellan. That's the real truth.
Yeah, you got that right, brother.
Thank you, brother.
brother.
And we're here to discuss a brother show.
Who's that guy? Hulk Hogan? What did I say?
Hulk Hogan?
Is that who that is?
Hulk Hogan.
No,
it's Hulk
Randy
Hogan.
Savage.
Oh, what's the Hulk dad? Hogan. Is wait something something? The dad from Full Metal Alchemist, played by Hulk Hogan. Thoughts.
Okay.
We're going somewhere.
Okay, brother.
Okay, brother. work is hell, and we're here to discuss a show about how much work is hell. It's called Better Off Ted, and this podcast is called Better Off Chats. Yeah. Good evening, everyone. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Hey, welcome. Welcome to it.
This week on Better Off Chats, we watched Season 2, Episode 11, Mess of a Salesman, and Season 2, Episode 12, It's My Party, and I'll Lie If I Want To. First up is Mess of a Salesman.
It's
which
my
was...
party, and I'll lie if I want to. It's my party, and I'll lie if I want to.
What was that?
Go ahead. That's from Party in the USA?
Oh, sure. Yes. We'll talk about Miley Cyrus There's more than once on this episode, John. Thank you for saying that.
Wait, why?
We'll get there. We'll get there. Mess of a Salesman was written by Tim Doyle. It was directed by Mark Buckland.
Remember Doyle from Angel?
I do. I loved him. Rest in peace. And it originally aired January 26th, 2010. Now, Magellan, can you tell me what happened in Mess of a Salesman?
This is Hulk Hogan playing Bane.
Hulk Hogan, Sean Connery.
Oh, good. All right. Well, in this episode, Ted gets his brother Billy a job selling lab supplies, and Phil and Lem go overboard buying items they don't need. Veronica is set to receive an award from the Viridian Foundation to help raise money for a charity she doesn't know about.
Think
Alan, what do you think of Mess of a Salesman?
Oh, Magellan. So this episode is playing around in tropes that I've seen a lot in sitcoms, mainly the obnoxious, fratty, older, younger brother that comes to the set.
Older, younger. In this case, is Bill younger than Ted?
He definitely exudes younger brother energy. I don't actually remember if he's younger.
But it could be one of those things. By the way, Billy and Ted.
You think Billy and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Yes, I do now.
Probably. But it could be one of those things where it's like the older brother who's like more immature and you're like, oh my God, whoa, so ironic.
Yes, it's basically that stuff. And then this trope has just been done, I feel like, in a lot of different sitcoms where it's like, how do we assert that the main character is like committed to his job and wants to be seen as cool while you introduce somebody from his family who proves that he is
embarrasses him or whatever. Yeah. Can we, I mean, let's start with the brother plot, I guess, right? And I actually wanted to make a direct comparison to one of the shows that you're, I think, obliquely referencing right now, which is Scrubs,
correct.
Which does this. So if people haven't seen Scrubs, I'm sure you know by now that we're watching it because of Fake Doctor's Real Friends. But JD, the main character of Scrubs, has an older brother named Dan, and Dan shows up and is like a total deadbeat, like still lives with mom, like can't hold down a job, like what, like it's the whole thing. And he's like sarcastic and goofy, you know, he's presented as, at least from JD's perspective, a character who's like sort of at a dead end in his life or something like that. And so JD has contempt for him as a result of that. And so, you know, I think that Scrubs does a pretty good job of conveying that JD is like being really condescending and rude to his brother, by viewing him in that way. And like, actually, maybe Dan likes the way that his life is, and maybe he's happy, and maybe he's taking care of their mom and, you know, doing important things. So yeah, I think Scrubs does a good job of conveying that like JD has these sort of hang-ups about his brother, and his brother is annoying, but also has some redeeming qualities. And then we kind of see things from the brother's perspective, and like he talks to Cox in a way to make sure that JD's okay. And, you know, it's like a complicated, nuanced thing. And I think where to the point of comparison that I wanted to make, and I'm curious about your thoughts on this, is that, you know, it feels like, to me, the point of bringing in like a family member or a sibling or something is to do one of two plots. Either the main character is like, oh my God, my brother is the best. Wow, you guys are going to meet him. He's so cool. And then all of his friends are like, dude, your brother sucks. Or, oh, my brother, this guy's terrible. And then everyone else is like, dude, your brother's
cool. Why aren't you cool like your brother?
Yeah. And this episode of Better Off Ted does neither of those things. It does nothing with the brother.
All of the criticism I read about this one, and I know I've been pulling a lot from critiques recently, but that's because Better Off Ted season 2 is kind of a weird mess, and it's hard to just like pull my own like just fully original thoughts to rend yet again, folks, blood from the stone, to pull out some criticism here. Better Off Ted is like becoming a cartoon. We talk a lot about how like it feels rushed sometimes, and these plot lines could have been fleshed out a little bit more and become more earnest if they had time. But something like Scrubs also is shooting for the 20-minute mark, and something like How I Met Your Mother is chock full of like emotional gut punches. Like that's the entire setup of that show, is like we're gonna be
they plan for them in the pace of the episode, right? Yeah.
Excuse me, I'm just so choked up by this one. But Better Off Ted is not a show that's trying to like reveal that Billy is actually really sad. It's just like, here's something I also saw in a review. Billy's plotline doesn't have anything to do with him explicitly being Ted's brother, other than to briefly comment on the idea of nepotism.
Good point.
Like, you could have just introduced a guy who was like, this is the new marketing guy, or like Phil and Lem could have gotten addicted to buying things and like standing up to their bosses because of like a work seminar or something. It has very, very little to do with it being Ted's flesh and blood, other than like those scenes where the two of them hang out with Rose. And even those are just like, Ted has another person here to help.
Yeah, because I think what they do in this episode that's frustrating is they leave a really great setup on the table, kind of unaddressed, which is Ted loves his brother to a fault, to the point where he doesn't see his brother's faults, right? So that's one part of it. Another part of it is that, like, Ted's brother being around reverts Ted to the most base version of him being this, like, machismo competitive guy who we've seen him be in other plots and seen that that's, like, a unappealing side of Ted that's accentuated when his brother's around. He really wants his brother to be in Rose's life and, again, is somewhat blinded by that as well. And all of that's great. And then his brother is fucking manipulative. Like,
Yeah, the episode really never devotes time to being like, yeah, that's everything Billy's doing here is terrible. Like, he's basically schmoozing Phil and Lem.
Yeah.
And convincing them to buy all this stuff and taking them to these, like, private airliner clubs to, like, convince them in the way that self-help often does. Like, you deserve this. This is, like, what you guys really want.
Right.
It's
right.
It's a snake oil service.
It's a snake oil thing that he's doing.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
And I think what this episode really misses the mark on is the way that it's choosing to characterize Billy is just inconsistent, because Billy lies to Ted's face about, like, oh, well, you know, they wanted the cadaver, or later when it's like, oh, usually the robot family comes with grandparents, but they didn't buy those. And then the episode tries to pivot to a thing where Ted's like, Billy, I'm always cleaning up after your messes, to try to make Billy to be this sort of, like, lovable fuck up or something, when that's not Billy's problem. Billy's problem is that he's, like, a rampant amoral narcissist who got fired from his last job because he was sleeping with his boss's wife or whatever it was. And I really wanted for there to be a moment in this episode where the glass shatters, to make another How I Met Your Mother reference, the episode where everybody notices each other's bad traits or whatever, and they hear the glass shattering noise. I really wanted there to be a moment where the glass shattered for Ted and he realizes, oh my God, my brother is a dick. My brother's a horrible person.
Awful.
And that never happens, because we end up in the space of him being like, oh man, my brother is, like, causing trouble again, like he always does. No other character talks to Ted about his brother. Phil and Lem don't ever reach a point where they're like, wow, he really, like, messed with our minds and played us. And so, yeah, what's the, to your point with the article, or the piece of criticism that you read, it's like, what's the point of him being Ted's brother exactly? Because it doesn't feel like there's a resolution that's in any way tied to that relationship.
They also don't, like, look that similar. I know white guys with short black hair all look the same, but they don't feel like brothers. Like, yeah, and
I think they're close enough. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I agree with you. I think we're sort of spoiled by JD and Dan, where, like, Tom Cavanaugh and Zach Braff do look related to each other.
Of course, of course.
And
or, like, Barney Stinson and Wayne Brady, definitely.
Yeah, right, you know, right.
Very similar.
But yeah, in this case, their genericness, I guess, is the sort of familial trait.
So I looked into this guy, by the way. The guy who plays Billy Crisp is Eddie McClintock.
Okay. Billy Crisp, by the way.
Yes, yeah. I wish they said that out loud, because that's just a fun name. The short-lived series Warehouse 13, which was a 2009 to 2014 sci-fi show that I think I watched the first episode of. It came on the heels of, like, the X-Files and, like, Fringe and stuff, where it's, like, mystery, but there's comedy, and it's two detectives, and it's weird, and I think I remember thinking it was, like, pretty funny and wacky. He's the lead on Warehouse 13.
Okay.
He's the male lead.
Okay, sure.
So this guy has led shows before. I think he's also a major character on Supergirl, so he's definitely in the, like, you know, cable acting kind of.
Yeah, I think he was fine. I think it was a writing problem and not a him problem. But he also, was not particularly memorable, because he was just, like, a very handsome white guy.
So here's the breakdown, right? We get Billy coming in. He wants a job. Ted's like, I can get you a job. Veronica, he asks Veronica. She's too busy. fawning over the fact that she received an award. I got an award, she says over and over again. Even though it's not even a big deal, it's for a thing that she doesn't even know about. And so when he gets the job, he's in marketing, which is scummy. I've worked in a form of marketing before, kind of similar to this, where you're convincing people to buy into a service. And Phil and Lem kind of take on the confidence that he's imprinting on them and become very arrogant and start telling everybody, deal with it. Because, I don't know, it's 2009, it's 2010, and we're still doing the, like, what if you yelled at your boss? Wouldn't that be badass?
And I think the important thing to note, just one more piece about Billy's characterization that I think is inconsistent, is, again, this sort of, like, Ted is always cleaning up Billy's messes. Oh, my gosh, you're such a screw-up. But what we see in this plot is that Billy is a very good salesman. Like, that is his gift, is that he can sort of get these guys who don't want to buy anything to buy everything. And I just felt like that was, inconsistent over the course of the episode.
The lead into absurdism, though, when they are literally, am I to understand it right? It is a monthly corpse delivery service.
Yeah, that's the thing that they bought from him. Yes.
That's amazing. MeUndies, eat your heart out. If a corpse delivery service wants to sponsor chats, please feel free to do so. Chatspot@gmail.com. We can set that up. Just for legal reasons, I have to say, don't actually do that. But they buy all that stuff. And there's also a, like, kind of nice Veronica and Linda plot going on. I think you mentioned in your notes somewhere that the show has at this point fully realized that Linda, that Bagels is the best chip on the
right,
show.
That's where the heat is. That's the most fun.
That's the meat and potatoes, and those two characters do best when they're not dealing with Ted, which, you know, the review I read also noted that, like, where is Ted in this episode? All the plot lines are, like, solved by him because he's the one who, like...
Where was this review from, by the way?
This was an AV Club review, okay. Actually. They have good SEO, so they always come up when I look up, like, better off Ted
reviews.
Well,
they have good content, too. I mean, hey, AV Club, if you want to sponsor and or hire us, you know, hey.
Yeah, please.
Why not? let's just shoot our shot.
Why not? If you want to hire us, avclubchatspot@gmail.com, sure. It's like he's initiating and, like, concluding all of these plots, but he's not present for a lot of it.
Yeah.
And, right. You know, 90% of the time when we watch a sitcom or something, like a drama with a main leading man, I'm thinking the show always does better when he's not there. And for once, it's like, I think Better Off Ted actually does better when Ted is there. I think, like, the comedy focuses and is a little bit sharper around him.
Yeah, because he's the straight man, right? To, like, the other characters. Because when you put Linda and Veronica together, they create a very specific kind of weird that needs to be balanced out in some way.
Yes.
And Phil and Lem, obviously, same thing. It's fun when Phil and Lem bounce off each other, but it's more fun when they're sort of a singular unit bouncing off of Ted or something like that. The only stuff that Ted really does is characters come to him and they're like, Ted, there's a problem. And he's like, oh boy. And then he goes and tries, when Linda and Veronica's problem surfaces, he goes and he tries to talk to the president of the Viridian Foundation. He tries to talk to the lady from the charity. And those scenes are nothing. Like, both of those scenes are those two people slamming the door in his face, basically.
Right.
And then we can get into Linda Veronica in more detail, but just to close out Phil and Lem and Billy, well, okay. The one plot thing that we have to know is that Linda and Veronica are getting, their whole plot is about getting money for the charity that Veronica's award is supposed to support because they find out that they like it. Then they realize Viridian takes a huge cut of the money that they give to charities. So they try to talk to the head of the Viridian Foundation to get that changed. He's like, no way. Then they just take the money and give it to the charity directly, which is a felony. and then they have to get this Viridian Foundation guy off their back, basically. And the way that it all gets resolved is Billy and Lem and Phil go to the guy and put the cadaver in the trunk of his car and catch some incriminating photographs of him dumping the body. And they all show it to Ted on their little photo camera thing. And, like, that's how the episode wraps up. And, again, Ted has no agency in that whatsoever. He just comes home, and these other characters are like, hey, Ted, we ended the plot.
We did the whole episode.
Just so you know. Yeah. I don't know. I thought that was a pretty pretty bad resolution to the episode, personally.
Better After That has not really done resolutions well.
No, it has not.
There's plenty of comedy along the way. You know, I'm not just here to dunk on this one. I think there's a lot of, like, individual moments. Yeah. But to dive a little bit more into Linda and Veronica's stuff, I think there was, like, some genuine sincerity and merit in having this plot line be about, like, A, the way that companies use charity as a way to basically, like, do tax evasion to pay lip service
PR
and say that they're altruistic.
Stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. To say that they're altruistic for PR reasons, but actually, like you're saying, 95% of the money that's going out is coming back to them and 5% is actually going to charity.
Yeah.
Which is twisted, but also, like, maybe this is the 2020 in me speaking, not that surprising. I'm not like, wait.
Right.
Seriously?
Right.
But yeah, I thought it was surprisingly good. It kind of washed over me really quickly, though. Like, I don't have that many memorable moments, although probably I have two hardest laughs out of this episode, and both of them involve Phil. One of them is, I forget what the context is. I would hope that you can remind me, but he talks about eating a bunch of cheese, like a ball of like 10 different pieces of cheese in one. I think it's like he's saying, like, look how rebellious we're becoming. I just ate a whole bunch of cheese.
Yeah, they're at like another bar with Billy or whatever, and Phil does that.
He says something like, I put like 10 things of cheese and I squished them into one and I eat it all at once and now I'm dying. And it reminds me of this incredible Simpsons moment that I just found for the first time recently where Homer, he gets a meat grinder and he puts 5 pounds of spaghetti through it and condenses it into a bar and then eats the bar.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, this is brilliant. This is such a good idea. I can have a whole meal in one. And then, like, beat, and then 911. Because you just ate 5 pounds of spaghetti that were condensed. Yeah. it's funny to me. I don't know why.
That's a good bit, yeah.
But the other hard laugh for me was when... So Linda is also dealing with her own plot line, where her brother is an alcoholic.
No, that's the next episode.
That's the next episode? Okay, okay, that makes sense. Because I was like, wait, that part's so good. And I was surprised I was in this episode because it doesn't connect to anything. Okay. So then, yes, that's my hardest laugh from this episode was Phil eating a bunch of cheese and almost dying. really, the bar is just lowering every episode with Better Off Dead.
I think this one is. I think we've had a couple recently that we've liked, and this one it just, like, I don't know, the different parts of the plot just don't connect. Like, it doesn't feel totally coherent or totally on the same page as itself. I think the Linda Veronica stuff is the most fun of the episode. It also does feel like they're kind of rehashing some of the fun things they've done that we've seen before, you know? Like, I don't know that we've actually seen them do Good Cop, Bad Cop, but it did feel kind of familiar. It felt super familiar when they're grilling the president of the Viridian Foundation and Linda's chewing him out and then Veronica's in the background like, yes, attack him, finish him or whatever.
Oh yeah.
That felt like the scene where they were in the boardroom and Linda like told the guy that he had he was jealous of the light bulb or whatever. You remember that episode?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it was pretty funny when Linda headbutted the guy in the face. I don't know. I thought that was good. And then I liked the way that they played it when they went to Ted afterwards and explained the situation. And Ted's like, have you been drinking? And they're like, a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, that was so
Which
funny.
Which is
oh, I've been.
Part of the cartoonish. I mean, this is a particularly cartoonish episode, I think. But for whatever reason, I think on the strength of Andrea Anders and Portia de Rossi's performances, I found it charming. Which I know kind of runs counter to some of the critiques that I've had before, but I'm comfortable being a little bit inconsistent myself in my critiques, I would say.
The show is a little inconsistent.
Yeah. But I think also, you know, for the people who are going to come at me, the thing about this episode is it doesn't fully compromise Veronica's, like, kind of, you know, shark brain, her evil. There's still some of that in here. So anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
I have some moments here, too, that I thought were worth bringing up, and I wanted to ask for your opinion on. There is more than one joke, especially at the top of the episode, where it feels like they're filling for time. And to highlight how
Are you talking about Bing Zoom, I'm getting a muffin?
Literally in the review I read, they wrote something that was like, was Bang Zoom a line that was used to fill time? Because it's not a funny line.
I liked it. I liked it. But it was so nothing. It was absolutely nothing.
No, I'm referring to the repetitive like masculinity between Ted and Billy, where they're like nibble twisting and he's like, no, I'm at work. Just kidding. Take that. Punch in the balls. Like, no, I don't know any siblings that act like this.
Yeah, I always see siblings on TV who are like, so physically violent with each other. And it's like, I've never had that experience with my siblings. We've argued or been upset with each other, but never wrestled my brother, never like punched him or anything like that. And it just, I don't know. I guess people have relationships with their siblings like this, but
I believe it's real. I just haven't.
It just feels overrepresented in television to me.
Yes.
So I don't know. It felt that also felt like part of the sort of living cartoon of it, that they're so like sack tap frat bro-y. I did like the bait and switch though of his brother doing it to him and Ted being like, this is where I work. Like, I'm not going to do that to you. And you think like, okay, Ted is not going to do it. And then Ted does it. I like that because it's like, oh yeah, Ted is a douche. It's important to remember that he sucks too.
And he will do whatever he can to get like to, you know, get what he wants in this case.
Yeah, and so I like that, and Ted doing the nipple twists as a sort of mask off moment for Ted, but not, I don't like them as just kind of like moments of comedy because I don't really think they are.
You know what is good Billy stuff though, Magellan?
What, his interactions with Rose?
Yeah, his interactions with Rose are very sweet and like honest.
Yeah.
Picking her up and she's like doing the plane thing or being like, check this out, Dad, and then she like calls him something and he chases her around the room. Yeah. Like, I've seen kids do that. That's very fun.
He holds her upside down and then she's like, I'm gonna see if that made me taller, and runs off.
That was
adorable. It was really cute.
Yeah. The thing I'm referring to is one thing you can do with a sibling plotline or like an outside actor coming into the show is have like someone like Ted point to other characters in the show and go, hey, here's their dynamic. They're weird. Ha ha. Don't you get it? Because you, the viewer, also know that they're weird.
Yeah.
And there's a very funny moment where he's introducing Billy to Phil and Lem, and they're trying to like talk through like, why are there two of you or something? And then they just start like talking back and forth and they kind of get lost in their own train of thought. And then Billy's like, why are they doing that? And then Ted goes, oh, that's just how they process information. Like treating them like they're zoo animals or something.
Yeah, that moment was funny.
I think the writers realized that was funny because then later when, like 10 seconds later, when Ted and Billy are like, again, being bro-y with each other, Phil and Lem do the exact same line. They're like, why are they doing that? That's how they process information, by being idiots. It's nice to see when the show like acknowledges its best gags and plays with them a little bit more than just throwing them out, because a lot of Better Off Ted is like, oh, all these jokes are just happening very quickly. I can't catch all of them.
Yeah.
And then just a very dark moment, but also really funny. After they're talking about the corpse delivery service, and Ted is like, hey, Billy, can you, stop doing this for them, because they're not going to be able to put those corpses somewhere. And then he changes his mind because he's like, I feel bad about doing this to my brother. He's like, I would never, I don't want to reject your body just like every girl in high school. And it's like, oh my God, that's some sibling burn right there. Yeah. That's like the kind of mean that only family can be to you.
Right.
Which I thought was actually good. But that was basically what I had. Did you have some like notes or moments that you really enjoyed?
Let's see. I think just a point about the cartoonishness is it really is starting to feel like they know that they're getting canceled in this episode. And they're like, yeah, we're going to do a thing where they put a dead body in a trunk and it's like normal. And
yeah,
I really did not think that was funny. I thought it was pretty reprehensible. It would be funny in a show like It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia or something, where that is the tone of the show, that they do heinous shit. But in this show, I did not find that charming. But some moments that I did find charming, for some reason, I really liked when Ted is talking to the science supplies salesman guy, trying to get Billy a job. And the guy's like, I don't know, Ted, I've got my own idiot brother that I'm not giving a job to, or something like that.
Right.
That's funny. Ted has to buy all these beakers from him, and then he says to camera, "And now people will know how many milliliters of pencils I have." That was...
Oh, because they're doing all the gags about beakers?
Yeah. The one dead body joke that I thought was funny was when the guy from the computer room, like, wheels the...
Fine, the computer room!
The computer room. It's a reference to the game Shadow the Hedgehog. Comes up to Ted. I didn't like that it was in the elevator with all the girls from the charity. I thought that was overkill. But he's like, "Hey, Ted, just so you know, there's a new rule in the computer room. They just came up with it today. No dead bodies in the computer room." Which, that was...
Very good rule.
That was funny. And then I think, honestly, my favorite line of the episode, which this isn't really saying much, but I think it's when Linda is yelling at the Viridian Foundation guy, and her big insult to him is she says, "You, sir, are a bad egg."
Yeah. Brutal takedown right there. A bad egg. By the way, speaking of weird things that we found kind of incongruous, there is another Viridian ad. It feels like the Viridian ads are like a husk of what they once were now, and they just bother me in how not lazy they are, but how they're not very like incisive anymore. They're just saying the thing that is in the episode.
Yeah.
So this episode actually ends on an ad for the Viridian Foundation. And usually in my notes, I will write down, like, what's the funny quote from it. And I didn't even write anything from this one.
It was so fast. It was, like, 10 seconds long or something.
Guys, like, what are you doing? What are you doing? Your show is canceled.
Just toss that at the beginning. I didn't understand why that was at the end instead of the beginning.
When you put it at the end, people aren't as likely to pay attention. It's like...
Well, and also the joke has been done by that point.
Yeah.
Like, put it at the beginning to preview, like... Oh, this is, there's going to be charity stuff in this, or in the middle, or I don't know. But at the end, it's like, that's the last, because that was the last thing. Oh, no, it was right before the last commercial break and come back, and there's credits. And then there's the credits gag, which I forgot about, where throughout the episode, there's this running joke where Veronica doesn't understand what a fawn is, which is like,
oh, sure.
Not that funny, but the button on it is really good, where Linda shows her a fawn and Veronica's like, "What was I thinking of? Oh, a monster." That might have been the funniest line, but all the jokes leading up to it, it just doesn't make it worth it, in my opinion.
It drags, definitely.
Yeah, so it's just, this isn't a great episode of Better Off Ted. I think there are definitely much, much better ones than this. And this one is really, you get through it on the strength of the performances more so than the strength of the writing, I would say.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we got for Mess of a Salesman, an episode that just shows that Better Off Ted is extremely almost done. But it still has a little bit of gold in it. It still has really good performances, like you're saying. So we will be right back after this brief little break with a guest who will be with us to discuss It's My Party and I'll Lie If I Want To.
Welcome back to Better Off Chats. Alan, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here again. Finally?
Yeah.
After finally. So many years.
You've never been here again before, but finally you're here again. Usually the second half is just me doing both the parts. So this is a real joy for me.
Right. You kind of do a flawless impersonation of me. But no, this time I busted my way into the podcast studio. And I said, no, I'm doing it this time. Give it to me.
Can I just show the folks my impression of you? Here's me talking as you.
Hey, guys, it's Alan. What's going on? How are you doing? Hello.
Pretty good, right?
That was spooky, honestly. That was really good. Listen, Magellan.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Thank you. I want to introduce somebody, too, because I feel like if you get to do it, then I get to do it, right? That seems only fair, right?
All right. Okay. I'll let you
just
do it
this once. Hey, folks, for this segment, we are joined by the man who has graced us with his precious time before he has to get back upstairs and put some more evil into the world. It's Austin!
That's a fantastic introduction. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Austin is a fan of the podcast, a regular listener, as of Better Off Chats, I think.
That's right.
Yeah, introduce yourself a little bit.
Yeah, I'm a short-time fan, but hopefully now we're going to be a long-time fan. Yeah, I'm I'm Austin. Up until a few months ago, I was a grad student in math, and as one would imagine, I spent most of my time watching TV, and so Better Off Ted was in the rotation, like, at least once or twice a year. And
wow.
That's how I, you know, became a super fan, I guess.
How many times have you seen the entirety of the show?
Oh, man, like, easily once a year through grad school, but probably, like, a few before that. So, like, 6, 7, 8, like, probably at least 8 times.
There you go. All right.
Wow.
I'm just a hopeless nerd for it.
Hell yeah.
Well, you don't that's usually awesome. Get diehard fans for shows from the last 10 years, but that's really baller, actually.
Yeah.
I'm glad you see it that way.
It's not a sickness. So, I can stop whenever I want.
How did you first encounter Better Off Ted? Like, what were the circumstances of your very first viewing?
Oh, man. It's weird. It's like such a formative experience that I actually remember it, which is bizarre because I don't remember a lot of other first whatever.
That's perfect.
No, my dad and I were like flipping through TV and mm-hmm. we just like caught, I think we caught the memo episode.
Where everyone's calling each other names or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Classic, iconic app.
And I think we caught that show. We caught another episode, and it was Veronica smearing cream cheese on an iPhone, which, you know, that sucked.
Again, iconic.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
So that was like my first, you know, things that I remember about it.
That's cool.
It's definitely one of those shows that just was on, and the people who like it a lot were just like, hey, was that show good? And they go back to it and with podcasts like this, or in your case, just from repeatedly watching it, and you're like, oh, it was good. Oh, yay. And that's always a good feeling, right?
It really is.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I'm sure it holds up to a lot of rewatches.
Yeah.
I feel that way.
So out of all the episodes that you could have requested to join us for, what was it about this particular episode that we're about to talk about, It's My Party and I'll Lie If I Want To, that called to you?
Well, I honestly, I could have probably gotten excited about any of them. This one, though, I think this is like the second to last one, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think you've said on the pod before that the show didn't get to air its final two episodes.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But this one feels really like kind of a point of closure on the show. You know, everybody's like saying their feelings and stuff. And it like in its own way, it's still kind of cheesy and hokey, but like there is a sense of finality to it. And so I don't know, it's like kind of, it's almost an emotional episode, like as close as this show gets to doing an emotional episode, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Well, let's get into that emotional episode. I think that's a great way to frame it. And let me give you just the logistics of this one. So it's season 2, episode 12. It's My Party and I'll Lie If I Want To. It was written by Michael Trevorbaugh, who's written quite a few of these eps. Directed by Michael Spiller, who, Alan, we recognize as a Scrubs director from time to time.
He's a scrubber.
Uh-huh. It originally aired on August... Well, oh, right. That's right. I was like, yeah. Oh, January to August. This is one of the two episodes that was not aired in the show's original run. So I guess we pull this from Wikipedia.
This is when it was released on streaming services.
On streaming services, August 17th, 2010. And Alan, what happened in It's My Party and I'll Lie If I Want To?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. In this episode, Phil and Lem create a new lie detector device, which ends up creating havoc for Linda and her family. Meanwhile, Ted and Veronica use their respective daughter and niece. That's such a weird way to word that. Ted and Veronica use their respective daughter and niece as pawns to gain favor with Chet, the boss upstairs.
Like, both halves of that are somewhat inaccurate, because the lie detector device does not directly cause havoc for Linda, and Veronica does not use her real niece, but that's funny. So we've got these two... I think two like pretty separate parts of the episode going on. Phil, Lem, and Linda, and then Ted and Veronica. Where do we want to start with this one? Does anybody feel a strong pull to either of those two halves?
I was really into the lie detector machine. I think it's it's one of the best comedic devices, both literally and literarily, that they use in this series. Just a thing that beeps whenever it feels like old school comedy, that like somebody's trying to say a whole spiel, and every time they lie, the thing goes ah. It's just so funny, and it's got so much rich potential, and they use it so well throughout the episode, and then it kind of even loops around, and like Austin was saying, it gets kind of nice at the end. It's like, oh yay, like even Veronica has a soul. So I think all the lie detector stuff was really funny. And like that initial meeting where they're talking about, the power of the machine. And then they're like, yeah, Veronica, like it doesn't it's basically flawless. And she talks right into it and says, like, I poisoned one of you. And then yeah. Lem's like, I think I'm dying. And she's like, no, I'm just I can basically she says, I can lie to myself such that I believe my lies.
Yeah.
So lie also, detectors don't work on me.
There's a little bit of a tease and a bait and switch for Phil Lem shippers there, where Veronica's like, by the end of the day, I'll have two of you make love to each other. And then Lem, you know, hides his true feelings. And to Phil and Ted is like, all right, well, have fun having sex with each other or whatever. Don't let the intimacy ruin the friendship.
So good.
Which I think is him vocalizing a fear that he has about pursuing the relationship that he really wants with Phil.
Oh, bingo. Man. I'll give you points for that.
You know, I didn't see the Phil and Lem ship.
That's very funny. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah. No, I was just saying I didn't see the Phil and Lem ship until hearing you guys talk about it. And I always like interpreted it as like they've just got like such a pure, like, I don't know, youthful, childlike friendship almost. Mm-hmm.
It's definitely, but, you know, 2010s, like, we're not, what if we kissed? Haha, just kidding, unless, like, they're not actually saying anything.
Two bros chilling in a hot tub 5 feet apart because they're not gay, right?
Precisely, precisely. But TV shows like this and from this time especially are not going to say that, but that's the fun about shipping and fan fiction is it's not what the show says, it's what the show doesn't say. So we know, we can see through the Matrix a little bit. Yeah. But that's also just our future vision. I liked them a lot. And then, the lie detector gets used on multiple people. It gets used on Linda. And it basically just, like, forces... I love the way it forces people to be brutally honest. Because in real life, like, polygraph tests are certified BS, nonsense, not real, doesn't actually work. On most people, it's very easy to cheat a polygraph.
Right.
They're not even usable in a court of law, I think. But like easily one of the funniest lie detector moments is when Phil like has a breakdown because the lie detector and like becomes too honest. He can't stop like unleashing truth about himself. I think this is in the same scene actually.
It's the very one of the first things. Yeah, the whole Phil rant is he's like, I had never had any doubts. Okay. Every day I'm going to read the whole thing. Every day I'm incapacitated by fear. I don't know where the magic comes from. And I'm terrified that one day I'll wake up and it'll all be gone. And I'll end up alone living in my brother's basement with his trains. Buzz, damn you.
Buzz.
So funny. He really kills it in this episode.
He's got some, like him reacting to the lie detector is, both of them reacting.
Some of the best stuff.
It's so good. That's like one of my favorite lines is, it's a random buzzer. It's working.
You're right.
That line, for some reason, just lives with me.
It is often the weird, like, sidelines that you're just like, this is actually the one that gets me the most, you know?
And the other example of that is when Linda points out, like, what does this thing do? And Lem's like, oh, it's a random buzzer. Not everyone can be Thomas Edison. Continue.
Yeah, he's much cooler about it.
Yeah, right.
I like that they describe here also Linda's, or Veronica, her ability to cheat the lie detector machine with a, quote, her alarming mix of sex and death, which is what I'm looking for in a partner. That's what it says on all my dating profiles. I'm looking for someone with an alarming mix of sex and death. If you're out there, please don't DM me. but the lie detector plot line kind of takes a sideline to this whole kid mafia thing. I read the term kid mafia, and I think we're going into, like, actual dark stuff. And there is a truth to this plot line, right? Magellan, I think you had written in your notes about how like men in particular in the workplace have these sorts of bonds that women like Veronica can't have access to, whether or not it's because they're parents or because oftentimes corporate culture is a boys club and it's just a like a clique that you can't be a part of. And she's trying to bust her way into that in the traditional Veronica way of lying through it.
Yeah, and I mean I think it at least in the case of Veronica, it's not necessarily true for all women who are in the workplace, but in Veronica's case, like to get to the position that she's in, she felt like she had to sacrifice having a family or being a mom, right? And so like Ted and Chet can have their jobs and well, Ted's a single dad, I guess, so that kind of throws a wrench in it. But Chet at least can, you know, have his job and presumably has like his wife or, you know, hired help or whatever doing a lot of the domestic work that allows him to like be a part of the kid squad and also be the boss, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's like kind of under the surface of Veronica's issues here in a way that I think stays true to the tone of the show while addressing something like legit about workplace culture. So, yeah.
And the fact that she tries to actually use her, she originally tries to use her niece to like curry favor with all the parents. And then her sister doesn't let her do that after the last time she used her for work. And so instead she uses the neighbor kid. And like when they're at the fake Chuck E. Cheese arcade place, which gave me, there was a couple like kid hangout spaces in this episode that made me nostalgic. But like seeing a cup full of tokens, I was like, oh, I kind of want to go. I kind of want to go to one of these places. She uses the neighbor kid and gives her a bunch of tokens to pretend that she's her daughter. But she looks nothing like her and everyone knows what her sister and her she looks like. So,
yeah, they pointed out in the episode, I guess, that like that is definitely a way older child, right?
She's yeah. like 10.
She looks 2 years older and she's taller and yeah, all that stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's funny.
But between Chuck E. Cheese and Fantasy Lynx Mini Golf, I definitely just felt waves of like, man, A, I miss going out places with people, and B, I miss kind of being a kid, sort of.
And the talk of Phil and Lem talking about how they go bowling. I was like, oh, come on.
I want to go bowling.
Bowling and miniature golfing. That sounds great.
Should we start a Chats Bowling League?
Yeah, just you and me.
Yeah.
One-on-one.
It sounds good. We'll play with the Wave Racer. Not Wave Racer.
Hydro Thunder.
Hydro Thunder. Thank you. The Hydro Thunder machine at the bowling alley.
Heck yeah.
Bowling scene sounds like it's changed a lot since I last went bowling. I don't know what the Hydro Thunder is.
Hydro Thunder is just an arcade game where it's like you're on a jet ski or something. Or you
it's like
a
racing game, but you're a boat. Yeah. And it was at not a bowling alley, but when I was a kid, it was at a miniature golfing place I used to go to all the time.
Oh, nice.
There you go. The last time either of you went miniature golfing?
Earlier this year.
Whoa.
Yeah. Well, when I went to go visit my dad in February, and we used to go all the time. So
damn,
we went in February.
How is mini golfing in 2020, my dude?
Well, it was pre-COVID, bud.
So. Yeah, I know. But what is it like in the world we live in now, where like?
Well, it was a lot of us talking about the Democratic primaries.
Yeah,
at the time.
There we go.
Just like the good
who
old
we
days.
Think's gonna win.
It's exactly, yeah.
Right. And my dad being because MSNBC is filling him with this sort of like centrist fear. He's like, I don't know. Bernie seems cool, but I don't think he's gonna get the votes. And it's like, Dad, come on now.
come on, buddy.
I don't want to have this conversation.
Austin, do you remember the last time you went mini golfing?
Yeah, I want to say it was like summer of 2018. I was with a few friends. We were out like on Lake Erie, like in Cleveland, not Cleveland, like, you know, that part of Ohio on the lake. And there was, you know, like this little town with like sort of a beachy feel, like a little hot dog shack, whatever, mini golf place. And that was a pretty good time in 2020 or 2018, like, which isn't that different from 2020 other than, you know, global pandemic, I guess.
Other than everything.
Other than most of it. It holds up, I think.
I don't doubt it. Because the thing with golfing, and I haven't actually gone golfing, real golfing myself ever, but it's more about A, like the atmosphere, just hanging out and trying to play well. Whereas mini golfing is like, you can really like drill into like, I'm going to perfect this course. Like I'm going to get the perfect series of bumps against the walls and land this right into the tiki torch's mouth. Like this is going to work out for me. I've played like mini golfing video games. Like golf with friends is a really great, like it's simulacrum of mini golf, but actual physical mini golfing, I don't remember the last time. And that's sad to me. But hey, maybe after the vaccines distributed, we can go mini golfing.
Did we go in high school? Or no?
You know what I think, Dylan? That year, like that, which was probably around the time Better Off Ted was coming out, summer, a bunch of the guys were going mini golfing and I wasn't able to go. Like I had a family thing or something. I remember being like, everyone else is going mini golfing except for me.
That's right. Okay.
So well, that might have been the last time you went or before you went with your dad.
Yeah. Well, we'll go. We'll go sometime.
Thank you.
I wish we could go with Chet, the best character on Better Off Ted.
honestly, I'm not gonna fight you on that, even though Phil and Lem are great. I love Chet.
I'm staking my claim that Chet is my favorite Better Off Dead character. He just, the actor's able to do these stares where he only widens his eye. Like, he doesn't move any other part of his face. He just, like, subtly widens his eye, and there's this kind of, like, manic energy filtered through, just the most, like, kind of boring corporate normalcy, and I love it. I mean, the way that I love, like, you know, the satire in Fallout or something like that, where it's, like, so tongue-in-cheek and buttoned up and stuff. Chet is just really, really funny to me.
We've seen him before, right? He's in some earlier episode. Yeah. I feel like he makes...
Yeah, this is like his fifth time or fourth time or something.
He makes some comment in an earlier episode. He's like, I wasn't making a pass at you. That was a joke. Or like, he's very...
Yeah.
Like, uncomfortably above board. Like, not above board. I don't know. He's like trying to stay within the lines in a very obvious and like uncomfortable seeming kind of
unsettling,
way.
Unsettling. Like a comedically unsettling way.
Right.
He sort of feels like... I can't remember the character or the actor's name. The guy who plays Monica and Ross's dad in Friends. Like, he's goofy and kind of awkward and uncomfortable. But this guy's like that, but like more mean-spirited or just kind of gross.
Yeah, just but a little scarier. It.
Yeah.
Talking about Jack Geller? Played by Elliot Gould?
Yes.
Yeah, Elliot Gould. Yeah,
holy smokes, good pull.
That's right. Friends is a good show. Yeah, I love, like, the moment where he's like, Veronica, something's wrong with your niece. She doesn't look right. And everyone's freaking out. And then he moves to the side and he's like, I put a hat on her face. That's not where hats go.
He is, so I think what works so well about him is it's kind of like the satire being that the higher you get in the corporate structure, the less human you are. So you start at the bottom, you have Phil and Lem, who are deeply human and flawed and wonderful. And then you go up to Ted, who is like human as a chameleon. Like, he can act human and put on the face of it, but he's not like fundamentally kind and empathetic without being pushed to be so. And then you have Veronica, who is like, abandoned all
sort
sense
of
humanity.
Of Ted, right?
Right.
She sort of like slips into it occasionally, but on accident.
But exactly. Yeah. And then you have Chet, who's like so far gone past being a person that he's looped around to being this like doe-eyed, just nothing man that, like you said, Austin, like he exists within the boundary of the rules. He's like, I only know how to act normal.
He's like almost as innocent as Phil and Lem in a sense, right?
Where exactly. Loops around.
He's like so evil that there's a purity to it.
Definitely.
It's really funny. Yeah.
That's the hat not supposed to be there got an out loud laugh out of me.
Yeah, that was I really like
hats that. Don't belong there.
Yeah. That's a pretty good Chet impression, actually.
Oh man,
it's not that hard. It's more so it's just kind of like, hey, hello.
Like if you taught a machine learning algorithm how to like talk like a boss.
Yes, that's what you it plugged in a bunch like, of boss speak into a machine. Yeah,
that's what it would sound like.
There were a couple of jokes in this episode that weren't so fun that I do want to bring up because I'm the person that would bring these up.
I think I know what you're about to talk about, and I wrote them down too.
There's like a 1-2 punch of like
gender
genital jokes.
Yeah.
Well, so Ted asks Linda to help him make Rose happy, and he's like, what do young girls like? And he's like, I found the only girl who was an 8-year-old girl at one point in her life. It's Linda. And she tells him, like, oh, give her a nice crown and tell her she's a princess. And then if she doesn't use it, give it to me because I'm, I have a party later and I could use it. He says, thanks, Linda. You really are a girl. And she says, thanks, Ted. And it's not just the genitals. It's a whole lifestyle. Which, like...
Yeah, that was regrettable. It's a regrettable
joke.
That one doesn't age well. And then the other one that doesn't age well is Phil and Lem are talking about, like, they don't understand women or men. And I think it's Phil who's like, I wish there was a third gender with boobs, but who, what does he say?
Something incapable with boobs that was incapable of judgment.
Oh my God. So not good. Like, what are we doing here, guys? It didn't age well.
So here's my thing. It makes me think about when societally we came to understand the fundamental difference between gender and sex, because I spent most
time,
of my life.
I feel like.
Was that?
I feel like it was a little around this time or a little bit after that it was like universally or more universally acknowledged.
Understoodly, yes. Because I like learned it in college. So like it's not to say that I've known this all my life and I feel bad for the show not knowing it. I think genuinely people did not have that understanding at the time. So being like, you're a girl because you have boobs and vagina. It's like, okay, that's one way to think about that. It's a little bit more complex, but sure. And it's just, yeah, we haven't like run into genuinely dated jokes in a while, but those two, I was like, ooh, and they came right after another that I was like, all right, but well,
the thing that I find notable or that I always sort of have to remind myself of is just how far we've come and how short of a time when it comes to like gender and sexuality conversations in this country, because like this episode of Better Off Ted predates the Supreme Court decision that makes same-sex marriage legal across the country. You know what I mean? Like it by like 5 years or something. It's really strange to think that only a decade ago, you know, it was as far from that decision as we are from that decision now, basically. So that's just to sort of support the point that you're saying that like that we're past that point now, but also it's kind of surprising how far past that we are in that short of a time.
And there's plenty of people even today who don't have that understanding, you know. John and I have like talked privately about the idea of like cultural assumptions. Like we think everybody knows certain things. Like we think everyone knows that drugs are bad, or we think everyone knows the difference between gender and sex. But it's just objectively not the case, right. Even in the U.S. Like not even true across the board at all. But that's not to say that the episode still is. It's definitely still very funny. Just surrounding those jokes, because those both feel very like isolated. Mm-hmm. It's not like they dip into the rest of the episode. That Linda plot, though, is I referenced it in the first half, is a stone cold stunner. So Linda, her brother needs money for is it for Alcoholics Anonymous? What was it for?
I think, Austin, is this right that he crashed her car? Is that what happened?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, she needed the money for repairs or something.
Yeah.
And Viridian's only gonna, this is so weird. This is not the funny part of the joke. It's just bizarre that she's like, I asked for an advance, but Viridian said they'll only give it to me if I carry an orangutan to term. Like,
the joke made me shiver.
Yeah. It made me laugh because I was like, that's bananas, huh? No pun not intended.
Oh, no.
oh, no, it's correct, Austin. And, you know, I'm like, wait. That's so weird. That's so dumb. Why? I was just talking to my boss recently about like, do people actually ask for advances on checks? And like, yeah, if you're trying to like build your house or something or pay off a loan, then this is totally a common thing. I've never been able to do that in my career, but I'm still pretty young. And just the bizarreness of like, yes, you have to put a monkey and an orangutan inside of you is so weird.
And then the follow up joke from Phil is like, they're larger than human fetuses, so the last month of the pregnancy, it'll pick up everything that you drop, which was disgusting. Oh! Made me physically quiver. Yeah. Anyway,
it's super gross. Yeah. But Linda's plotline doesn't stop being kind of spooky and gross, because one of the other things we learn is that her brother is a recovering alcoholic, and as a scene later where I guess Phil and Lem at some point got super drunk. I forget what led them there exactly.
They thought she was having a party and they wanted to like crash the party, which they didn't
But they didn't know it was an intervention. But I mean more like, why were they drunk on the way there?
I think they were working up the courage to like tell her what's what kind of thing.
Oh, sure.
Yeah,
because the lie detector thing basically revealed to them when they invited Linda to what sounds like the most fun activity in the world, which is bowling with Phil and Lem, getting nachos, and then taking the cheese back to the lab and testing its quantity of real cheese. And if you bowl above that, you get to drink, which sounds like the most
part of these plans.
Evening. Yeah. And when they invite her to that, she says, no, I can't. I'm busy or whatever. I have to do a bunch of work. The machine buzzes, and they're like, okay, she's lying to us. So that's why they confront her. But okay. She's lying because she doesn't want to share her family business.
Which guys. Turns out she's hosting an intervention for her brother, and the two of them come in swinging. And this is like borderline Veep-esque awkward, where I'm just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
And everyone's trying to be nice. They don't make it too awkward. There are ways you could have directed and like framed this scene that made it more uncomfortable. But it's kind of there and gone pretty fast, and very funny that they're walking with the bottle and then they realize it pretty quickly. But they still, as they're leaving, are like, oh, we shouldn't have these anymore. Here, take this. Don't give it to the alcoholic. And they're clearly giving it to her brother.
Yeah.
I was worried that the button on that was going to be that he tried to take a swig of it and they had to be like, no. And I was like, that's not how interventions work, guys.
Wait. I like that he just played it as like, what?
What's
happening?
Yeah. Wait, you're saying you think that could have been more awkward? Like, what would they have to do?
Well, I think here's what it is. Good, great question, Austin. Thank you for asking. It could have been okay, like whatever her brother's name is. Her brother. Let's say his name is Derek. They're like, all right, Derek, don't forget the rules. And then he's like shaking as he's holding the bottle. And you wanted it more awkward. That's what it is.
Fair enough.
And then they don't leave. That's the actual super awkward part. And they stay and sit through it. And they have to like talk through it with him.
Can you imagine if the episode just turned into a 50-minute real-time portrayal of them getting involved in the intervention? It's a super-sized episode. No commercials.
Yeah.
It's like My Dinner with Andre. There's like barely any camera movement.
It's quiet.
Yeah. That would be the best episode of Better Off Ted, in my opinion, if they just totally went. Because it didn't get aired, right? So they could
do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of the other, going back briefly to the Veronica Ted stuff, the technology that they're like vying to get in, to be in charge of the project for is, speaking of orangutans, and I wonder if these things are related now in hindsight, but it's technology that lets you speak to animals. And they're like, we can already speak to animals. They just can't understand it, which is a dumb joke that I would have written. And then Chet's like, I really want to use it to ask baboons why they're called baboons, which is awesome.
It's such a Chet answer to that question.
He's like, oh, it's such a silly name. Baboons. Baboons. Like, he just like falls in love with saying the word. Oh, my God. Chet. I love Chet. Can we get the guy who plays Chet on the show? Magellan? Oh, no. Didn't he pass away?
He passed away.
No.
Yeah, he passed away. R.I.P.
We'll ask the people on the reunion thingy if any of them wants to be on our podcast during the Q&A. We'll ask.
Oh my God, no!
Bad idea. We won't actually do that. Maybe
we will have recorded our last episode by the time that we're...
I'll do a bonus episode if it means we're going to get a cast member. Are you kidding?
Right, okay. All right. Sure.
And so I think when Ted and Veronica are fighting, another huge laugh that I got was I had to watch this scene multiple times to fully grasp the joke. Lem's watching them fight and he goes, you know, it's weird when beautiful people fight. It's like watching the Hope Diamond yell at a sunset. Again, the best sitcom lines are the ones that nobody in real life would ever say, but you would think and you would be like, I shouldn't say that. That's stupid. And they just say it out loud.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
There's something about like those don't feel like they're on equal footing, like the Hope Diamond and a sunset, like they're like two different levels of abstraction or something. And like, I don't know, picturing them yelling at each other like people. That's what did it for me. Now I'm breaking it down on like Chet level, breaking it down.
Those line up. But can you?
Those are very different. Forms of beauty, though. So it's interesting. And who's who? I guess Veronica's the Hope Diamond because she's sort of this like manicured beauty. And Ted is
rough
the sunset.
Cut.
That trap.
Well, it's physical beauty, like valuable beauty versus like emotional beauty, right? I also did not know what the Hope Diamond was until I Googled it. So now I know all about the Hope Diamond.
Wait. I've seen it, I think.
It's a really big diamond, right?
Yeah, it's a really big diamond.
Is there more to it than that?
No, it's a really big diamond. I think it's also like a good diamond too. Like, you know how some diamonds are bad, but that one's good.
There's mythology around it being cursed. There's like movies around it.
It holds a terrible, terrible curse.
Oh,
yeah,
that's tight, I guess.
That's pretty sick. That's pretty rock and roll.
Exactly.
That's very metal. Get it? Because diamond.
No.
I got two oh no's out of Austin. This is the kind of guest I live for.
In my head, I'm trying to calculate how to make a joke about that joke being rough and also diamond in the rough. And
there it is. You did it. That was the joke.
I couldn't quite get there.
No, that's
there's no diamond in that rough joke.
Okay.
I think like asserting the existence of the joke is like basically the joke. And that's like that's always good enough for me anyway.
Yeah. It satisfies the equation.
Yeah.
And then our final couple of scenes here, Chet, upon finding out that both Ted and Veronica have been lying to him, exiles them to everybody's favorite set, the tiny office, as punishment, which in the year of our Lord 2020, it is so weird to watch people talk about, ew, it was so close that I felt you sneeze in my mouth and I can feel your breath on me. And I'm like, no, there's COVID everywhere.
Harrowing experience to watch two people be that close.
Also, this is a better form of sexual tension than her, like, outside of the tiny office, going to Linda and being like, yeah, I think I love Ted. This is much better than that.
Right.
And that would be a weird button, but then the real, like, post-credits button is Linda, Phil, and Lem just, like, hanging out and dancing after going bowling together. And then, like, Linda slaps Lem's butt, and which I think this was just the actors being told, like, hey, just pretend you're at a very fun party.
Yeah, I think they assumed at some point that the cameras weren't even rolling anymore and they just started to feel it. But that was really delightful. The first time I watched this, I don't think I caught the initial bowling reference. And so at the end, I was like, why are they all dressed like 1950s people? This doesn't make sense. But it's because they were bowling. So yeah.
It was pretty funny.
Who's the best dancer out of them?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it's Phil.
I think
because Lem sort of offers himself up as a supporting player in the dance, and Linda's relying on some flashy moves, you know, but Phil really has consistent technique over the course of that scene, I would say.
I was trying to reference a Vine. I can't find it. It's the one where there's the guy who's like juggling the pins, and then the guy in the front of the camera goes, why is that guy bowling? It's iconic.
That's good.
Yeah, basically. I thought that was a nice little moment. And what you were saying earlier, like, did they not realize the cameras were running? I think the real truth of it that is funnier to me is they spent 20, 25 minutes maybe more, just recording dancing footage, and they're like, we'll cut 30 seconds out of this. It's fine, guys. Just keep going. So that's how you get the butt smack, because you don't get that until you're like, ugh, what else can I do besides, like, shake my hands?
Yeah. I wonder if they knew by that point that they were getting canceled also, and there's maybe a bit of chaos in the dance because they're like, who cares? I'm going to slap Lem's ass.
I'm not going to go gentle into that good night.
Yeah.
Burn out like a flaming star.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
So we're in like post Better Off Ted world now. Kind of.
Yeah,
the show is over. I think these were also released as on the DVD, so the show is canceled. I'm so curious how this show tries to what its final episode is, because I'm pretty sure I know that it's not a finale. It doesn't feel like a finale. I mean,
does it
feel final, Austin, or no?
Like, there's some sort of wrapping up, but honestly, it feels like a bonus episode, which, I mean, maybe that's me knowing that it's sort of a bonus episode. Like, it doesn't feel like a big everybody's saying goodbye thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
And this was a kind of common thing, like, with, the show wasn't on Fox, but, like, network television shows that ended a little early. Like, Dollhouse also had episodes that only aired on or came out on DVD and then later on streaming. So... Yeah. And that's a narrative show, so that actually had to like end to finish the plot, as I understand it.
I wonder what the calculus is on that when you're running a network of like you paid to produce the whole episode, right?
Right.
But you're just saying, oh, it would make us more money if we like, you know, reran Friends or something. Not that Friends was on ABC, but. You know what I mean? Like, it would make us more money if we... What was on ABC? Will and Grace? I don't know. Something. If we, like, played something in syndication as opposed to playing the new episode of Better Off Ted. Like, that's an interesting calculus that they have to make there.
Didn't you say, it didn't air for, NFL games or something? Like, was it the Super Bowl?
Yeah, they did something. They, like, totally rearranged it, because of something like that.
Wait, did that somehow nuke both episodes? I just thought about that now. Like, it's two episodes. They have,
yes,
that's
it
weeks
did.
Apart.
You're correct. The network announced on May 27th.
That's right.
That it would air two episodes back to back on June 17th, contingent on the 2010 NBA Finals not requiring a seventh game.
Well, that's
so it's NBA Finals that killed Better Off Ted's final two episodes. That's why. Then yes, that's definitely more profitable than airing the last two episodes of this
what
poor rating sitcom.
What sitcom is more profitable than the NBA Finals, though? Like, I don't know. That's not a fair matchup.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah.
It's not. That's why sitcoms don't like to air new episodes near sporting events anymore.
Yeah.
But sometimes you get put into the death block of time and it's like, well, you either air it now or you don't air it. And they said, well, let's not air it.
Yeah. They totally mismanaged the release of this show, I think. Mm. I don't know how much longer it could have lasted, but at least another season, I bet they could have done. I don't know.
Or like cycle out the cast or something and you can get this into more of an office level of like, it's about the cast hanging on. We like the characters more. But
I kind of like it as like a... You know, you're not too attached. Like, they don't grow too much. I kind of like that about the show. Maybe, I don't know. It's easy to, like, encase it and preserve it as, like, two seasons of pretty good television, like, that didn't go south.
Right, right.
I don't know. That's like, the good thing about very short
runs. It's an interesting thing to... It's an interesting thing to wonder, right? Because, like, people often... I think people name this show among shows that were canceled too soon. But... what would more of it have looked like? Like, would there have been attempts to develop the characters? Would it have started to feel stale? I don't know. So, yeah, that's an interesting point that because it's short, it kind of just gets to be the thing that it is.
Yeah.
And we don't see it ever really compromise that too much.
You could do a, like, 2020 special of Better Off Ted, because it can be about the times changing. If the characters aren't going to change, then do the Mad Men thing and have the times change with the characters. And now we're dealing with the 60s instead of just the 50s or whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, there are options there. The closest thing we got to...
Do the Parks and Rec thing where the last season is like 10 years later or something. They like weirdly jumped into the future.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, the closest thing to a reunion that we have gotten before, what we're going to be talking about in a little bit, is in mid-2011, Malcolm Parrott, under his rapper name Verbal, released a song called Revenge of the Nerds, which I believe is on the soundtrack for the final episode, so we might be able to catch a little bit of it. I've watched that music video. It's basically the whole cast of Better Off Ted, like, hanging out doing a music video with Malcolm Parrott. It's a decent
That's
song. It's
fun.
Like nerd rap, kind of.
That's fun.
Yeah, Andrew Anders is in it. Jay Harrington's in it, obviously. The guy who plays Phil is in it. I think Portia de Rossi is in it. So that's pretty good. But that's basically what we're going to get. We'll talk about this in the finale, whether or not the show needs like a reunion. But yeah, I kind of agree already that it kind of got. It did what it needed to do. And like you were saying, Austin, if they went longer, then it changes the vibe of the show. That it was like this bottle of 13 episodes or whatever of just fun and straightforward plot.
Yeah. And I think, Austin, you made a good point at the beginning of the episode that, like, there is a kind of emotional, maybe not resolution, but there's a kind of, like, reassertion of the emotional core of the episode in this one, where you have, like, Linda, Phil, and Lem dancing together and, you know, making amends, and you have Veronica and Ted sharing this tender moment over the lie detector where they're pretending to be like, I hate you, and I'll never be there for you, and it keeps buzzing, and... It's like enough heart that you can send off the characters and be like, okay, they're just going to keep living their lives and doing what they do and liking each other. And I guess that's an ending. That's enough of an ending for me.
Yeah, I kind of like that. You get kind of resolutions, or like you get everybody saying how they feel about everybody with the exception of like Linda and Ted, which I can honestly live without, you know?
Yeah.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Definitely.
Uh-huh. But that's,
do we have... Do we have any stray thoughts from this episode? Any lines that people wrote down that we haven't mentioned yet that we thought were funny? I'm skimming my notes right now to see.
Oh, I did mention to Magellan before recording that I found out through Googling this episode that there's actually an episode of Hannah Montana with the same title from 4 years earlier. So I think that they stole it.
I thought you were going to do a bit at the beginning when you were doing the summary where you were going to read the Hannah Montana summary instead.
I don't have a short version of that summary. I'd have to write one. But that's okay. That would have been a very funny idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's an episode of the like, fifth episode of Hannah Montana season one. It's called It's My Party and I'll Lie If I Want To. That's all.
I really, Oh, you got one?
I have a great one. I'm so sorry. This is so brief. When they're in the they're outside of the mini golf place, and Rose very quickly figures out that Ted is like using her to manipulate him, to manipulate for work. She looks at him dead in the eye and goes, "Dad, what happened to you?" And I'm like, "Oh shit." Getting bodied by your daughter, it must be the worst feeling.
This episode, I think, to its credit, also is a return to form of the kind of like what you think the premise of Better Off Ted is, because there's this like balancing work and home stuff, and like Ted is kind of a monster at work, and his daughter calls him out on it. And then the lie detector thing being like a genuine kind of soft sci-fi concept.
Right.
Both of those things are like, okay, this is what Better Off Ted is, right? And sometimes the show isn't this, but this feels like a very by the book episode in a good way, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do like the lie detector. Just like you said, it's kind of science fiction. And that is very much like, that's some one of the things that I like about the show. You have all this absurd technology that the guys invent that like, no way could this happen, but like it happened. So we're going to have an episode that involves it. And like, maybe it's not even central to the point of the episode. Like, you know, they make some like cow meat in the lab or the lie detector or whatever zany thing it is of the week. And like, that like causes things to happen in the office, but you're ultimately interested in like what happens in the office. And I kind of like that. And also just like the license it gives them to be completely absurd with the things that Phil and Lem invent. It feels like you've got like a bunch of crazy stuff that they make. It feels to me, it reminds me of like Rick and Morty. Like there's all sorts of absurd science nonsense that they make. And like, I don't know. I just like that they, instead of being grounded in reality, they're just like, okay, they're going to make some nonsense. And it doesn't matter how it got there, because we're going to be like done caring about what the nonsense is by the time it like pushes the plot out.
Yeah. And I think the most fun episodes of Better Off Ted have one of those at their core. So I totally agree. I have one, speaking of the lie detector, there's a quote that we didn't share, but that was so good, where Phil and Lem are like upset with Linda for lying to them. And then Phil sarcastically is like, "Oh, I'm certainly glad you're taking our money, Linda." And the thing doesn't buzz. And then Phil says, "God, I'm pathetic." I think that was my favorite line of the episode.
Jonathan Slavin.
Really good. Yeah.
He's a champion.
But that is, that's It's My Party and I'll Lie If I Want To. I think we did it, right?
We did the news.
Next week, we are watching the final episode of Better Off Ted.
Please, Magellan, next year.
You're right. Whoa. Next year. Wow, 2021. Wow.
Don't sing the Vampire Weekend song.
I almost did.
So I know. I felt it. There's a Vampire Weekend song called 2021. You should look it up. It's very catchy. Magellan thinks about it every time he says that.
You think about me.
Thank you.
I could wait a year, but it's only 3 months. Okay. Anyway. there's one more line. Sorry. There's one more line where Phil and Lem are talking to Linda, and Phil's like, "We have been shamed." And they both do a little
bow
when they say shamed. So funny. Anyway.
That's good.
Next week, we're watching the last episode of Better Off Ted. Season 2, episode 13, Swag the Dog. Ted is put in charge of a new employee reward system where the company doles out tickets exchangeable for prizes.
Dark. Dark. Very dark.
Dark. Did you hear the thing about, not to talk about Cyberpunk 2077, but to talk about CD Projekt Red, where the way that they determined if people got bonuses is like at the end of a week, if they did good work, they got a token. And then you could like cash out your tokens for a bonus.
Christ.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's some grim stuff.
That's great. That's more cyberpunk than the game sounds like it is.
Yeah, I saw this article about like an employee Q&A where they were talking to the heads of the company about like, "Wow, this went really bad, huh?" And one person was like, one of the employees was like, "Do you think it's ironic to make a game about corporate exploitation and be so exploitative of your workers?"
And that guy no longer has a job.
But whoever they are is incredible. So shout outs. But anyway, that's what we're doing next week. Austin, thank you so much for coming on. This was a delight.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
To speak to a super fan, a Better Off Ted super fan. Alan, can I tell Magellan. The folks how to get in contact with the show and all that stuff? Can I
Certainly.
Okay. If you would like to get in touch with us, just like Austin did, actually, you can email us, chatspod@gmail.com. You can also go into Twitter, go to twitter.com, look for chatspod there, twitter.com/chatspod. You can follow us. You can DM us if you would like. Both of those instances of ChatSpot are spelled C-H-A-T-Z-P-O-D. You can also find a community of listeners over on Reddit, reddit.com/r/ChatSpot. And they're going back and listening to our older seasons as well as our current season. And Alan, guess what?
What?
We've got a lot of seasons in the bank. We, in a few days from when you're hearing this, are going to hit the 5-year anniversary of the release of our first Chats episode. Can you believe it?
No.
Yeah, me neither. I can't believe it either. But over at the subreddit, they've already listened to our very first season on Farscape, and they're going to be listening pretty soon, I think, to our second season on Freaks and Geeks. So if you like comedy shows that were canceled sooner than you expected, that's another one. You better off Ted fans. You can check it over on the subreddit. and then if you want to help out the show, you can do so in a couple ways. For free, you can just go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts and drop us a review. That would be really helpful. And you can tell your friends about the show. You can do that stuff. And then if you want to send a little money our way, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/chatspod. And over on the Patreon, there are a couple tiers at which you can back us. $1 a month. Just put some coins in the jar, and that's just a nice thing to do. So we appreciate the folks that do that. There are a couple episodes that are available at $1 a month, like my solo X-Files episodes whenever they come out, as well as some random other bonus stuff and some old commentaries. And then at $3 a month, you get access to our thrice monthly bonus content. It could be Chats Nights. It could be pilot episodes. It could be movie commentaries. And at $5 a month, you're just saying, hey, we love you guys even more, which is really, really sweet. And yeah, that's the Patreon. I think that's everything. Alan, we have a couple other quick things we want to tell folks, right?
Yes, sir. I can do this first one here. Oh, sure. Hey, guys, if you are listening to this episode on the day that it comes out, which will be December 27th, 2020, we release these at 9 a.m. Eastern. This evening, December 27th, at 6 p.m. Eastern to 8 p.m. Eastern, the Better Off Ted cast is going to be doing a reunion / script read for charity. And it's going to be streamed, I think, over Zoom. We were linked to this by listener Nick, and I am looking for links right now to help people find it. But basically, they're going to be doing a script read of Jabberwocky, if I remember correctly. Let me just actually pull this up so I'm not incorrect. It's called Viridian Dynamics Presents A Better Off Ted Reunion. And again, that's December 27th at 6 p.m. And it's going to be over Zoom. You can get tickets. I believe it's $20. That money goes to Feeding America, which is a great charity. And yeah, it's being hosted by Pay-Per-View, who have been doing a lot of stuff like this. So definitely, if you are a Better Off Ted fan, you should consider checking it out. And it's pretty timely that we'll have finished this podcast and be releasing it right around the time of the reunion. So we're going to be there. Magellan and I both already got tickets. So yeah, Sunday, December 27th, 6 p.m. Better Off Ted reunion. Pretty exciting. And the other thing, as we mentioned before, is that this is the last episode of Chats of Television podcast coming out in 2020. You should check the Patreon for anniversary stuff. We're going to be doing a little bit of a special for patrons who have been sticking around for a while for our Chats anniversary. And Magellan already plugged all that stuff. So I can't believe we're already at the end of the year. But for now, before we take it home, let's take it to the Chatsums, where instead of our regular personal plugs, we like to do little recommendations. So Austin, first of all, do you actually have anything that you'd like to plug?
Oh, man. I guess I can think of a couple of things. Oh, sorry, my volume's spiking here. This might be getting greedy, but I've got another canceled too soon show that, I mean, I think just everyone should watch and love as much as I do. And then the greedy part is I'm hoping you'll think about it for a future season of chats.
Okay.
It's Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. It was, I think, on ABC a few years ago, like probably the same era.
Oh, yeah.
But it's kind of your quirky, odd couple story of like naive country girl moves to New York and then lives with like New York savvy, evil, terrible roommate from hell. But then they become unlikely friends. Yay.
I love unlikely friends. John and I have like joked about the title of this series for years and I've never actually tried to watch it. But you say it's pretty good.
I enjoy it. Okay. I guess it might not be for everyone, but it's the same. I feel like it's the same kind of like quirky, just off the wall, unpredictable comedy that you get from this show. Like, I don't know. This show feels a little bit wacky. Better off to head, that is. And this one's sort of wacky, but in like a different way. So I guess I'm not making a claim that like if you like Better Off Ted, you'll like this. But like it's sort of wacky and like, what did they just say? Or like, huh, that's strange. No one thinks that. I don't know.
Right.
But the title of the show is kind of, just like this one.
I was about to say.
Yeah, but I like it, and it also ran two seasons and sort of ended abruptly.
Kind of a cool cast besides Kristen Ritter, who's excellent. I'm seeing Eric Andre, who I adore, as well as James Vanderbeek is in this show at some point
as himself.
Oh fuck!
All right. That's excellent.
That's fun.
Yeah,
Dawson is finally here. No, I would at least love to pilot it. We'll try to pilot it for the Patreon and see if we want to make a show out of that. But that sounds cool. Magellan, do you have a chat sum for this week?
I do have a chat sum. Yeah, it's a video that YouTube had been trying to recommend to me for a long time, and I finally was like, okay, all right, I'll take a look. It's a talk, so it's kind of long. It's like an hour and a half long. I actually haven't watched the whole thing. I've only watched the first hour so far. But if there are folks out there who are fans of the McElroy brothers, of Mabim Bam, of, you know, all the things that they do, and Griffin McElroy specifically, it's a talk that he gave at Florida State University, where basically he's kind of running through his bio as a content creator and speaking about the sort of personal side of that story. And what I found actually really kind of helpful about it, you know, maybe if there are other people out there who like want to create things in their free time and whatever it is that you want to do, he talks about, you know, how overworking yourself, overextending yourself, like feeling guilty about all the things you could be doing but you're not doing, just all these different things that can kind of distort your understanding and your appreciation of the work that you accomplish or the things that you do or the life that you're leading. And I think just seeing someone that I've loved the content of and loved as a person for so long, to see him speak candidly about those things was really cool. So I don't know if it tracks for people who don't listen or watch Griffin McElroy's stuff, but if you're a fan of his, it's really cool to see him just sort of tell his story and his experience of it like that. So I'd recommend it. I don't remember exactly what it's called, but you can look look up Griffin McElroy FSU. You found it? The link?
I will link it in the description. It's An Evening with Griffin McElroy at FSU, presented by Club Down Under.
Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. I also have a chat from this week.
Oh, cool. What is it?
I've been having a lot of tummy troubles because it's cold. It's very cold up here on the East Coast, the Beast Coast, if you will, and you will. And so with the cold comes like me needing blankets and heaters all the time. And I've talked recently about how I kind of set up a tea station downstairs where I hang out in my room. And I got a new tea recently that was actually, I found through Binging with Babish, another chatsum of mine. He was like actually measuring something. And he was like, I need something rectangle shaped. And he like placed this box of tea on the ground on the table. And I was like, what is that tea? And it was, it's called Kava tea. It's a stress relieving tea. It is so good, folks. I don't know if this is a chatsum specifically for Kava tea, because I don't know the like statistical benefits behind it, but it's really cheap to get like a ton of it on Amazon. I like bought what I thought was one box and it turned out to be three boxes of like 64 bags total. there's an article called Meet Kaveh-T, a prescription-free alternative to Xanax, which is the worst clickbait I've ever seen. It definitely relaxes me, but it also, I think it has like a little bit of caffeine in it, maybe. It says it doesn't, but I don't believe them because I always get a little bit like awake after drinking it. But, you know, it's got citrusy vibes. It's got a lot of ginger smell and flavor. Highly recommended if you're a tea person. I'm like going down the tea hole to the point where I realized recently that I have a strainer, so I don't even need to use tea bags anymore. I can start getting into loose leaf, and that's really the flex.
Ooh, wow. Okay.
I felt bad because one time I was in Maine, where they really specialize in like blueberries and stuff, and they had blueberry tea. I was like in a tea shop, and I was like, oh, I don't have a strainer, I can't get one. And then as soon as I got home, my mom was like, we literally have like a beautiful strainer that's never been touched. I was like, damn it. So I'm ready to go down the tea rabbit hole, and I encourage others to do the same. It's very relaxing.
Nice.
Thank you again, Austin, for joining us. Oh, yeah. On the episode.
It was a delight to rock star. Talk to you guys about it.
Yeah, we'd love to have you on again in the future if there's another show that we're discussing. Maybe Don't Trust the Bean Apartment 23 or whatever else.
Hey, yeah, if you guys are into it.
Of course, but don't be a stranger, and we'll be around. Thank you to Magellan, as always, for bringing the rock to my hard place. Thank you as well to the Chats fans for listening through the year 2020. We wish you all a happy new year, a Merry Christmas if you celebrate it, and we will see you next year. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of Better Off Chats. Peace.